is prayer from the ashram. And I'd like you to repeat after me. This day is almost done.
This day is almost done.
When night and morning meet.
When night and morning meet.
It will be only an unalterable memory. So let no unkind word. No careless doubting thought. No guilty secret. No neglected duty. No wisp of jealous fog.
Becloud its passing.
Now, in token of our deep and abiding love.
Now, as a token of our deep and abiding love.
We would lay aside. All disturbing thoughts.
All misunderstandings.
All unworthiness. If things have gone wrong, let none of us lift an accusing finger. Who is to blame is not important. Only how should we set the situation right? And so serving and being served. Loving and being loved. We shall make this a peaceful haven. Where we, the children of God, shall live harmoniously.
Joyfully singing his name and glories.
Till we merge our little selves. Into eternal being and existence. Be it so. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Well, tonight we go on a Himalayan journey. Chapter 24. The friends in Yanzi provided Ramdas with all the necessities for the journey to the Himalayas, and the day for departure came. Many came as far as the railway station to bid farewell to humble Ramdas and Ram Kinkur. Both parties parted after mutual exchange of good wishes. In due time, Hardwar was reached. Hardwar, as the name suggests, is the gateway to the great shrines of the Himalayas. Here the pilgrims stayed for 2 days. It is most delightful to visit the banks of the Ganga, where congregate sannyasis, sannyasinis, sadhus, bhaktas, brahmins, pious mothers, all busy with baths, absolutions, sandhya, prayers, and worship. O Ram, thou art clearly manifest at this holy place. Now the journey on the Himalayas commenced. Up and up, Ram Das and Ram Kinkur mounted and reached the place called Rishikesh. Rishikesh is a very beautiful place. The scenes on the banks of the holy Ganga are simply charming. Here the lofty peaks of mountains are dimly visible at a distance, covered over with white mist, kissing as they do the rolling waves of clouds that hang above them. A nearer gaze presents to the eye high, gigantic rocks with dense forests, a mixture of green, yellow, and red hues of leaves, foliage, and blossoms. A still nearer view shows the crystal water of the holy Ganga that flows in a calmness and majesty, disclosing in her bosom large, huge pieces of rock. which her rushing torrent had pulled down in the days of yore and made round and smooth. O Ram, thou art sublime. On one side of the great river are seen a number of small thatched huts, neat and clean, ashrams of sannyasis. Ram Kinkar took Ram Das into one of these huts. The interior of the hut was fitted with the simplest furniture, a bamboo cot, two posts of which formed the pillars of the hut itself, on which was spread a deerskin and a kambala, or mat, or blanket lying in folds at the foot of it. A venerable old sannyasi was squatting upon the deerskin. On a peg was hanging his kamnandal made of a black shell, except a small piece of cloth and a spare kalpan, which were drying in the sun outside. He had no other clothing. On the sandy floor of the hut was a bamboo mat, and in the corner were two black stones, one big and the other small, for crushing almonds and such other hard eatables having shells to break. There was a calm, peaceful look upon the countenance of the saint. He welcomed Ram Kinkar and Ram Das with a cheerful smile, and they seated themselves on the mat after prostrating at the feet of the Mahatma. He offered some cardamoms to the guests and had a simple and childlike talk with them about saints who would be found in the thick forests on the opposite bank of the Ganges, unexplored by ordinary man, where for a number of years they might be performing tapasya. His beautiful advice to Ram Das was to remain as long as possible for his sadhana in solitude, than which there is no better means for control of the mind. He was kind, affable, engaging, and good. O Ram, it was thyself in all thy glory that Ram Das met under that simple roof. One thing more, the saint was very fond of birds. He would not miss to share his food with them every day. They would wait for the share on the tree outside the hut. He talked very lovingly of them. After coming out, Ram Kinkar and Ram Das wandered on the back of Mother Ganga, where there was a number of sannyasis clad in orange robes, their face beaming with a cheerful light. They had all come out for their usual morning bath in the holy waters. Ram Das, during his stay in Rishikesh, had occupied the mud platform around a banyan tree on the bank of the river close to the hut of a Mahatma. This saint was also very kind to Ram Das. His hobby was to feed cows and monkeys, who would always be crowding around his hut. In order to feed them, he would go a-begging in the bazaar and secure foodstuffs and grass. He was finding a peculiar pleasure in childishly dancing with monkeys, running after them, making strange noises, all in glee and sport. His face was bright, and his greenish eyes would twinkle, always with a watery tenderness. Under the same tree there was also a blind sadhu who had a good voice, which he made a right use of by singing the glory of Ram. 3 days were spent here in all peace and happiness. Ram Kinkar was kind enough to attend Ram Das's food. There are two big anakestras in Rishikesh, which daily furnish food to all the sannyasis. Of these kestras, one was started by a great Mahatma by the name of Kali Kambili Baba, who is now in Mahasamadhi. On these mountains and among sadhus, his blessed name is on the lips of all. With his influence, he has induced the wealthy merchants of Bombay and other places to open at every 10 or 15 miles on the hills, a dharmashala in which the foodstuffs are distributed free to the sadhu pilgrims who hold chits with which they are provided at Rishikesh. Ram Kinkur secured these chits for Ram Dass at Rishikesh. The story of the chits to get the meals makes me think of, I think it was the first time I was to the ashram, but it may have been the second time. It was the first time Michelle was there. She's reminding me. And at the ashram, everyone who, they don't do this anymore, but at that point, to have a meal in the canteen there, you had to go to the office and get a chit, which was a what we would think of as just like a plastic coin. And that would allow you to be able to have a meal in the canteen. And so there was always one of the office workers would be sitting on the ledge outside of the main office at the ashram, and you'd go up and put your hand up and they would hand you a chit. And I was focused on getting my meal and getting my chit, and walked up and stuck my hand up, and I hear this giggle, and I look up and it's Swami Satchidananda sitting in the place where the fellow who hands out the chits normally is. He doesn't have any, but he realizes that I haven't seen who it was, and he thought that was so funny, and he laughed and laughed. He said, "I can get you a chit." I said, "No, so much." I think I was late, and that was why I was hurrying. But he was so sweet about it, and thought it was so funny that I just put my hand up. He was quite bemused by it. He had such an easy laughter, and such a gentle way, and such a humble way about him. That Kate described it the best. She said, it's like when you're around a brand new baby, or maybe a month old baby, because brand new babies don't tend to interact much. And everybody sits around hoping that the baby will catch they'll catch the baby's eye, and the baby will smile at them or acknowledge them in some way. And when we would go to the ashram and spend time with Swamiji, and we'd be sometimes in a small group of a dozen people, or other times in a large group of maybe up to 100 people, all gathered around him, and he was someone of few words, unless words needed were necessary, but he would just sit and strum his fingers on his writing board, and he would be tapping out Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram, Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. There was nothing to be said. He felt no need to fill the air. He often was just sitting peacefully, absorbed in God, aware of the world around him. He wasn't in a samadhi state that took him from us, but just peaceful, patient, waiting to see if there was something that God would have him do. So Swami Muktananda's points from this first chapter in the Himalayas. Himalayan life reminds us of total reliance on God. Minimum basic necessities and diverting maximum time for the achievement of the ideal. Our dear friends and siblings, cousins on the path at the farm have, at Kameno Farm Ashram, have put these basic tenets into living that to live simply, to have just what you need, no more, to do just what you need to do and no more, and be ready when God offer something else or ask something else of you. So we have Papa's example of the extreme, the the saint that he met that just had one cloth on his body and one cloth hanging up, drying. He had a mat to sleep on a cot. He had two rocks, a large one and a small one, so he could break things that were hard like almonds. And we think about what we feel like we need to survive in this world. And I've been working with Mother's Truth series, going through reviewing the transcripts of it slowly and methodically. And one of the sections that I was reading today, she was talking about only having that which we need and not being trapped by things, possessions. That Mother had beautiful things in her life. Papa had a beautiful ashram that he didn't start but was founded for him. David and Carla had a beautiful home. Master had beautiful places. And yet simply they lived in them. They weren't cluttered. They weren't full of things that were unnecessary. Only the absolute necessities to share a life, the life that God has created for us. So we can emulate Papa that way. Just the basic necessities. So we can divert maximum time for the achievement of the ideal. Number two, visiting holy places with the right perspective will enable us to enjoy the scenic beauty with awareness that everything is his manifestation. Today here at our house, Michelle and Tristan and I were reveling in the beauty that's just outside the window and how God has created all of this for us. And whatever the beauty is that God presents you with, to take that time and marvel in it. Number three, endeavor to see him everywhere. Number four, pilgrimages should be undertaken with the right mindset acquired by going through the life and mission of Mahatmas who live there. That's an interesting take, not one that we necessarily have put into place in our path. I think about David and Carla's traveling around the country and Kate and Larry traveling through Europe and the Holy Lands and letting God reveal the places of the saints, the sacred places, and trusting God to bring those into light for us. So we can do both. We can prepare and then we can be opened. I've been doing proofreading and I just heard myself say opened, and I'm in my proofreading thing, I'm like, no, that should be open. Proofing my own words. During pilgrimages, fill the mind space with thoughts about the saints who lived or moved in those places. Resorting to solitude as much as possible is very important for sadhana. And I really can't emphasize that enough. That's one thing that all in our lineage have proven time and time again. The essential of taking time away, time in solitude, time in seclusion, whether it's 20 minutes if you have a very busy life, whether it's a week, whether it's a year, as David did, with breaks of people coming to see. But that time of solitude, on Wednesdays, that's one of my focuses, is I take the whole day when it's possible to just focus only on God and God's work, to prepare myself to speak, to prepare myself to welcome those who come to our house, that I may be a pure conduit for God's work and word. And solitude is what I found to be the most successful, the simplest and most useful way to clean out what's there, to clean out what's blocking the light of God. And if you find that you avoid solitude, I would encourage you to challenge yourself about that. Where is the fear in being alone when God is with you? So make that time and space. Even if it's, I've counseled people who have very busy jobs. They can't come and get you if you're in the bathroom usually. So even if it's 2 or 3 minutes in the bathroom with the door locked. Yeah, energization, solitude, connecting with God. Sitting in solitude in the midst of nature reveals a lot of insight, Swamiji says. While in solitude, we can expand our love circle by bringing more and more of his creations into our fold. Papa talking about the saint that liked to dance with the monkeys, and here we revel in the birds. 9, observing nature in solitude reveals several insights. 10, serve whenever possible. And lastly, for this section, undertaking pilgrimages with the right perspective will help in refining ourselves. And if you think about a pilgrimage, the actual journey is often the smallest part. It's making the sacrifice, making the preparation, all of the things that go into preparing for pilgrimage, listening for God's direction to take pilgrimage, when and for how long. These are all essential parts. And if we do it with the right perspective, it will help in refining ourselves. If we do it with the wrong perspective, it's simply a waste of time and can actually do damage. We've seen that over and over again. And so when God taps us to take a pilgrimage, we listen, we check, we weigh, we ask, "Do you still want me to go, God?" And then, as David would say, we wait for the green light. I like that idea that some of the times it's a yellow light, some of the times it's a red light. But when we get the green light, we're ready to go. And if God all of a sudden slams on the red light, we're ready to stop at that point too. There's no point in a forced pilgrimage. If it's not time, it will be of no use. So back to the Himalayas with Papa. Himalayan journey continued. On the fourth day, they started on their journey higher on the hills. As they climbed higher and higher, the scenes and the landscapes they saw were found to be simply enchanting. On the right, the sacred Ganges was rushing downhill in all her glory, and on the left, high rocky hills full of foliage and trees presented at once a thrilling and absorbing sight. The very air there was charged with the divine presence of Ram. The far-off hills and valleys, the varied hue sky in which the white, fleecy clouds assume fantastic shapes, the snow-capped mountains hundreds of miles away up, dazzling in the rays of the sun as though they were covered with sheets of silver, all these constituted indeed an imposing sight. Oh, the charm of the scene! Oh, Ram, poor Ram Dass cannot find adequate words to describe the grandeur, the beauty, the wonderful glory of the sights that met his bewildering gaze. As he walked on, he drank deeper and deeper of the splendor of Ram's infinity and was lost in the intoxication of it all. O Ram, thy kindness to thy slave is really unbounded. From day to day, both Ram Kinkar and Ram Dass walked on at a high speed. Ram Dass felt no fatigue, no pain, no discomfort of any kind. He was as fresh as ever. It was all due to Ram's grace, whose name was always on his lips. Thus mountain after mountain was traversed, and as they climbed on, grander and newer scenes presented themselves before their wondering sights. I just want to stop for a second and remind everyone that at this point, Papa is in flip-flops and or a lightweight sandal and cotton, lightweight cotton clothes, and they're probably at 7,000 feet elevation or higher. So this is truly a miraculous thing. It was a journey in the land of enchantment. It was all a bewitching dream full of the glory and greatness of Ram. There Ram exhibits his marvelous powers. He is a mighty conjurer. Vision after vision dances and flits before your eyes, and unconsciously you fall under the subtle charm and spell of the great magician. You forget what you are and where you are. You are simply absorbed and lost in the surroundings, like a wisp of smoke in a hurricane. Ram Dass was walking at high speed. Nay, he was veritably flying. Even the difficult ascents were scaled in no time. Most of the time he was unconscious of his body. His mind was entirely merged in Ram, who alone appeared to him in those enchanting scenes. Higher and higher he climbed. The indefatigable pilgrims, undefeatable, I think is what it means, basically. Ram Kinkar, who had a heavy bundle to carry, complained of Ram Dass's running speed, since he could not keep pace with him. But Ram Dass was not his own master. Ram was his master. At a certain place, they missed each other, causing anxiety to both. But however, Ram brought them together at a stage called Rudra Prayag. Thousands of pilgrims are every year ascending these hills, and during this season, from March to June, a regular stream of people is going up and down and coming down the hills. All the pilgrims, sadhus, and others whom Ram Dass met on the way were very kind to him. Some kind merchants from cities like Bombay were very solicitous, because Ram is kind, all are kind, and Ram is in all. The mountains are peopled by hill tribes, a fair complexion, complected and well-built race. They live by cultivating and cattle and goat breeding. Naturally, their lives and ways are simple. Their faith in God is very great. Ram, Ram is always on their lips. If you talk to them, they tell you with a glow of pride that they are the descendants of the rishis that have lived in those hills. Their clothing is wholly made of wool. Males wear long woolen coats and drawers and a black cap, and women rough blankets in place of saris. These blankets are prepared there out of the wool yielded by the sheep that they tend. So the foodstuffs and clothing, the two essentials of life, are the product of their own labor. Even while walking from place to place, every man and woman carries a quantity of wool which he or she is spinning on the way. They have simple pit looms on which they weave the yarn into cloth. Since their mode of life is free from the baneful touch of modern civilization, they live simple, pure, honest, and pious lives. At different stages of the journey over the hills, under trees or in small huts or caves, are seen sadhus engaging in austerities to seek their company and remain there. For even so small a period is a great privilege. The society of the sadhu is much needed bath for the mind. The pure atmosphere he creates around him by his meditation is the river in which the mind bathes and is purged of evil thoughts and impressions. Upon these sacred hills are the ashrams of such famous saints as Narada and Agassi Muni. There is also a place called Panduksar, where the Pandavas are said to have halted for some time during their journey to Kalas. There is a temple here, and some old inscriptions upon plates of copper. The first place visited by Ram Dass and Ram Kankur on the heights was Trijagnarani. That ascent to the spot was sharp and steep, and it has a plateau surrounded by hills covered with snow. Hence the cold here was intense. The pilgrims remained here for one day. Then, after descending some distance, another chain of hills was mounted. Here the path was narrow, rugged, and dangerous. Frail, rickety bridges had to be crossed. At three places, large tracts of snow had to be traversed. On account of the perilous nature of the path, every year many pilgrims are reported to have slipped down the cliffs and been washed away in the rushing torrents of the river, many hundreds of feet below. One instance of a narrow escape may be mentioned here. At a certain stage in the middle of an ascent, Ram Dass was sitting on the path awaiting Ram Kankur. This was the edge of a high cliff, and the river was flowing far below. The path was very narrow. A girl of about 16 years, full of energy and activity, was coming down on her return journey. It was a sharp descent. Her pace was rapid, and the sharp downhill path only accelerated her speed, and in spite of herself, she was running down at an uncontrollable velocity. Down, down she came. She was excited. Her face was flushed, and she knew she was being drawn down automatically, and it was beyond her power to control herself. Instead of running toward the hillside, she was staggering down to the edge of the path, the very brow of a precipice. Ram Dass watched the scene with breathless suspense. He was silent, calling upon Ram to save her. Ram alone could, and none else. Now she came up to the edge, and with a superhuman effort controlled herself. She had come to the very brink. Part of her left foot was out of the edge. Oh, Ram, how terrible a condition! Ram, thy name be glorified. Ram Dass looked and sees the girl falling on the path right across, uttering, Ram, Ram, saved, saved. Ram saved her. She got up and did not wait a minute, but continued her walk further down. Dauntless girl, What a marvelous faith in Ram is thine. The other was the case of an old woman who gave up her body in the basket in which she was being carried by a sturdy mountaineer who was specially engaged for the purpose. At certain stages in the journey, this carrier would lower down his burden for relief, and the last time he did so, it happened to be near the place where Ram Kankur and Ram Das were resting on the roadside. The bearer, as usual with him, lowered the basket on a rock and asked the old mother to step out of the basket for some time. But receiving no reply, the hillman peeped into the basket, and a cry of surprise and pain started from him. "The poor woman is gone," he exclaimed. "O Ram, thy will is done." Then walking higher and higher, Ram Das and his kind guide eventually reached Kedaranath. This was indeed a grand place. It was plain land in the midst of high towering mountains, covered with snow. The cold here was extremely severe. "O Ram, thy kindness to thy slave was so great that thou hast made him amongst almost proof against cold." Main learnings from this chapter, second section of the Himalayas. Ram, the creator, protector, and destroyer. Each one of us has a mission to perform. After the mission is over, he will bring about some instrumental cause for us to quit the scene. Prayer should come from the bottom of the heart and with the awareness that he alone is our savior. For Papa to have the sense and sensibility to just stop when he sees this horrendous thing happening, and to so deeply call on God, knowing there's nothing he can do in that moment, but to bring God's attention to this, to bring the light in that girl, to fan that flame within her, so that she felt the strength of God, that she could do the impossible. And we can do that for all around us. We can pray for that strength for all around us, that God's light comes through them with complete power, healing all, repairing all, preventing all hardships until it's time, as is demonstrated by the woman in the basket, for the soul's duty to be done. And then we release them, we release the soul, knowing that it's just a garment that's worn. And that a new garment of light until another garment of flesh is what is in our highest interest. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai. Chapter 26, Himalayan Journey Continued. In Kedaranath, Ram Das performed a most difficult feat, all by Ram's grace. He ascended one of the surrounding high rocks covered with snow. Of course, Ram Kankur followed him. While going up, they had to do so by holding the rough grass that grew on the hill. It was a steep ascent. For nearly half the way, Ram Kankur accompanied him, and then he refused to go higher up with Ram Dass, both on account of cold and the danger of slipping down. Meanwhile, Ram Dass, who had surrendered himself into the hands of Ram, mounted higher and higher until he reached the summit of the hill and touched its narrow conical peak. As he touched the top, he gave a cry of triumph. In the name of Sri Ram, he uttered at the top of his voice, Om Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. O Ram, what a glorious being thou art. Now descent was most perilous. An unguarded step or a slight slip meant a headlong fall and certain destruction of the body. However, when Ram guides, where is the fear? What danger cannot be faced bodily? He slowly crept down, nay, slipping down the hill. While doing so, it began to rain, white, solid globules of snow. He had ascended without any warm clothing, but by Ram's grace, he felt neither cold nor fear. At last, Ram brought him safely to the base of the rock. It took 5 hours to accomplish this ascent. The height of the hill might have been over a mile. Going to the source of the river, Mandakini, which starts at this place where the snow melts and flows down, he took his bath. The water was, of course, very, very cold, but what cold can affect when Ram protects. In Kedaranath there is a temple, some shops and residences. A day's stay and he, on the advice of Ram Kankur, is traveling onward. After descending for some miles, the pilgrims commence to walk up another chain of mountains. Higher and higher again they climbed. Again, glorious, enchanting landscapes and scenes met their eyes. At the foot of a hill, they came upon a resting place where there was a small tank called Gauri Kund, wherein hot water through a spring is collected. There was also another tank in which the water was yellow in color. From there, he and Ram Kankur started on their upward journey. Miles and miles of ascent were traversed. The pathway now was not so bad as that which led to Kedaranath. For days and days they walked on and at least neared the place called Badranath or Badranath Rayan. While they were yet about half a mile from the place, they sat down on the path and looked at the Badranath Mountains. The sight was bewitching. To describe the scene, the poor pen of Ram Dass is quite inadequate and unfit. As he gazed on, he for a time lost body consciousness and became one with the tall mountains, in the midst of which he was sitting. Badranath is the source of the river Alakananda. While going up these heights, at 3 or 4 places, the pilgrims had to cross wide tracts of snow. He traveled over them with naked feet. These tracts of snow are glaciers. Below the surface of these vast cakes of snow is flowing water in heavy torrents downhill to meet the river below. It is said that many pilgrims, while walking on their surface, have been sucked down by the torrent, some thin layer of snow giving way beneath their feet. The story is current that a wealthy merchant of Bombay, while being carried on a dolly or cradle-like conveyance by 4 strong men, was drowned and lost in the swift current below. Badranath was reached. It was a flat valley surrounded on all sides by high mountains, like Kedaranath. And here stands the temple of Badranath Arayan in white marble. At this place also there was a tank containing hot water, received from a hot spring running down the hills. as all the pilgrims bathed in this tank. The cold was very intense, but Ram was kind and gracious at the same time. So Ram Dass did not feel the rigor of the cold very much. He had some difficulty in gaining entrance to the temple for the darshan of Badranath Rayana, as there was heavy rush of pilgrims at the front door. But some sickly people were permitted to get in by a narrow side door, at which two pandas or Brahmins were set to watch. He sought entrance here. One of the pandas said, "If you are sick, you can come in." "No, Ram Dass is not sick," replied Ram Dass. "Well, pretend that you are sick, if you are not," suggested the Pandaji. "Never," returned Ram Dass. "He does not want the darshan of Badranath by telling a lie. It is against the command of Ram." Saying thus, he turned away from the place. But the kind Pandaji, at once grasping his hand, took him inside and getting him the darshan of Badranath, gave him also some prasad. "O Ram, thou art testing thy slave in various ways." Remaining in Badranath for a day, the sadhus started on their return journey. After several days' walk, they came to a place called Ramnagar, whence the railway line starts running southward. In all, the distance traveled over the Himalayas was 400 miles, and the time taken from Hardwar to Ramnagar was 40 days. Ramnagar, as the name suggests, is a blessed place. Charity is the ideal of the people here. Near the railway station, there was a dispensary worked by the Congress volunteers for the benefit of ailing pilgrims. Hundreds of pilgrims are every day receiving aid from the dispensary. Arrangements by well-to-do citizens are made for feeding sadhus and poor pilgrims. The people of the place are kind and hospitable. For his part, Ram Dass must say the same with regards to all part of India, wherever he traveled. Ram was uniformly kind to him in all his travels, because he had started on his travels at the bidding of Ram alone. At Ramnagar, he and Ram Kinkar got into the train proceeding to Mathura, where they reached in due time. Here Ram Kinkar, who was taken ill, proposed to return to Jhansi. During all the time he was with Ram Dass, Ram Kinkar was more than a mother to him. He took every care of him. It was all Ram's wish that such a friend should leave him. Accordingly, Ram Kinkar left Mathura for Jhansi. Ram Dass was now alone, only for a few minutes, for Ram had another sadhu ready at the Dharmashala, where they were halting to take him up. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And Swami's main learnings. Hold on to the truth, even during challenging situations. Truth is God. When visiting temples, dwell on the impersonal values personified in the deity. The idol represents the all-pervading reality. The last time I went to Encinitas to a master's hermitage there, I was only in the area for just a few hours, and the gates were already locked. And so to just be outside the gates, thinking about Master walking those grounds, residing there, writing the autobiography of a yogi there, rejoicing there, playing there, meditating, serving his disciples there, the disciples serving him. And to just be able to take all that in, whether the ability to walk on the ground was there or not. And to go further, we need not even leave our meditation chair to make pilgrimage. Whether we've been to the ashram or we haven't, Swami Satchidananda assured us that to think upon the ashram is to be there. And that Papa, being all-pervading, is equally present everywhere. In this moment, we can pilgrimage to the ashram, we can pilgrimage to Mecca, we can pilgrimage to the holy lands. Wherever God takes us, my favorite pilgrimage to the knee of my beloved guru, to sit on the floor beside his chair, drink in his presence. We would talk sometimes about David's astral family. And I would insert myself in various ways, and he would just kind of not say anything. And then I think it was really probably the last time we talked about it. And I said, I think I'm your golden retriever because all I want to do is sit at your feet and put my head on your knee. And David laughed and said, yes, yes. That was the only time he kind of affirmed that that was my appropriate role in the astral family. But a pilgrimage does not require going anywhere. Doesn't require packing or planning. But to allow the soul to travel. Not in a way like a New Age, transmit yourself someplace else, but just to allow yourself to expand to the place where you feel God the most. And hopefully it's exactly where you're sitting right now. Papa said that God took him all around India to show him that he was equally present everywhere. So that's one great lesson of this book. Pray to him for strength to hold on to values during challenging times. And see the Creator in the creations. Going into this next week, look for God. Look for God in His creations. Make your daily outings a pilgrimage. Seek God out, and you will find Him. Because he is everywhere. Seek and ye shall find. Knock and the door shall be opened. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. And just for fun, for the closing prayer, we'll use the other prayer. This one I'll just read. The sun shines for others. The trees bear fruit for others. The river flows for the good of others. The cow yields milk for others. Human birth is likewise meant for doing good to others. Love gave us willing, caring hands to perform some helpful deed. Love gave us sympathetic words to answer someone's need. Love gave us soft hearts to aid another along the way. Love gave us smiles and laughter to brighten someone's day. Love gave us all these treasured gifts for helping one another. Love which is God, works through us all so that we care for each other. Peace, bliss, amen.